This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to another edition of Spits and Suds as we make our way towards the NHL trade deadline. Lots and lots of things in the news as the trade deadline fast approaches. And thank you so much for making Spits and Suds the top hockey podcast in DFW. You guys are absolutely awesome. And to talk everything going on in the NHL is the greatness of Carol Schramm. She is the feature writer for the hockey news. Hey, Carol, how are you?
I'm doing well, Gavin. How's your day going?
Well, I am doing great. So much to get into, but I do have a tendency to do deep dives on people. So I was looking at your resume, which is awesome as far as hockey, but I did see on your resume that you were a DJ for 20 years, and we have to hear the backstory.
That's where we're going to start.
Of course we are. Yes.
Actually, it does have a legit media tie-in. What happened was I took radio broadcasting at the British Columbia Institute of Technology here in Vancouver as I was looking to get into radio for my career, something sort of dear to your heart, I guess.
Yes.
And it was while I was there in the summer between first and second year that one of our classmates got on student council. And she let me know that they were looking for people to DJ in the student pub on Friday and Saturday nights. And since I was very into music at the time and liked going out and having fun, it seemed like a pretty good fit all the way around. So that's how it all began. And I loved it and worked in radio for a while, bounced back and forth. And then when I moved back to Vancouver, I ended up back in the clubs again for a long time, and that was kind of the origin story there.
How often are you in a barn and you say to yourself, "Oh, I used to spin that song"?
I barely ever go out anymore now because I feel like I kind of did my whole lifetime's worth of experiences.
Yeah.
So I like quiet now very much, but
that makes sense.
Yeah, I still love to hear the old tracks, and there are certainly songs when I hear them that will take me right back to, you know, a specific night or a specific moment. Or I used to spin at a concert venue as well, where we had, you know, some pretty big name live entertainment come through, and so remembering back to some of those shows is always super fun.
So since you're based in Vancouver, interesting question to start off. Tom Gilardi, Vancouver-based, is the owner of the Dallas Stars. Obviously, there was a big news story years ago about his attempt to purchase the Vancouver Canucks and the litigation that happened. Let's just call it like that. How is Tom Gilardi looked at in the Vancouver/British Columbia circles?
Well, Tom Gilardi's family is really well established here in BC. His father, Phil Gilardi, was a member of the government back in the 50s, 60s, I guess. He was called Flyin' Phil Gilardi. And that was sort of, he was in charge of building a lot of the highways and infrastructure in BC during that time. And that was when the Sandman Hotel chain sort of started to come together as well, which is still part of their family properties. So the family's legacy runs really deep here. And I think that Tom is respected for what he has done with the Stars from, you know, even local hockey fans in Vancouver appreciate what the Stars have accomplished under his ownership. And then the fact that he also owns the Kamloops Blazers in mm-hmm. the WHL and has supported junior hockey so wonderfully in Kamloops and delivered Logan Stankov into your doorstep, you know, that's all good too.
Yeah, that turned out pretty good. Yeah, indeed. All right, from an outsider's perspective, someone that writes nationally on hockey, what are your thoughts on the Stars? And do you feel as though with the Haskinen injury, maybe an extra piece on defense? I know GM Jim Nill, we've talked about this on the program. He has said not just once, but multiple times. That's what's so fascinating. ESPN with the national game the other night, they said, well, maybe they're showcasing Maverick Bork. Jim Nill has wanted to protect the youngsters, and at the same time saying we're only looking at unrestricted free agents due to the contracts that are upcoming.
I feel like Neil's big swing was the Mikhail Granlund deal.
Yeah.
And also good on him for bringing in a player who has a reputation for rising to big moments. I know Granlund hasn't done a ton in the NHL playoffs, but as we saw in Four Nations, you know, anytime he puts on the Finland jersey, he's, you know, rises above what people's expectations are, and he's just revered in Finland. So I think that he could really impress the fans with what he's able to achieve in the postseason as a new cog in the Stars machine. You know, it is hard to know if there's going to be any more moves. As you said, with the uncertainty of the timelines for Haskinen and for Tyler Seguin, you know, ideally those guys come back and become your deadline acquisitions, and they're all fresh and ready to go for a nice long playoff run.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to be the. It's funny, as Stars fans, we were all upset as far as the LTIR kind of maneuverability, as far as the rules are there, but hey, they're going to be available for the playoffs. We said that about Tampa, and then we said that about Las Vegas, and then this year the Stars look as though they're doing it, and now all of a sudden it's okay.
Different from the other side of the fence.
Yes.
It's like, oh, thank God we can use the LTIR and we have the whole template of how to do it.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about players and let's talk about movement. Let's start, since you are Vancouver based, we see them on Sunday. Brock Besser, will he be playing in his last game as a Vancouver Canuck? To me, if he does get traded, that to me is the biggest piece of this NHL trade deadline.
I sure hope he doesn't get traded. This comes more from an emotional point of view than from any sort of hockey analyst point of view. Just Brock is such a good guy and has been such a loyal Canuck. He's the longest serving Canuck, and he's just the nicest human being in the world to deal with. And so, you know, he's very settled in Vancouver, loves Vancouver, was saying again that he really wants to stay and is, you know, just trying to focus on the game tonight against Anaheim. I don't know if they will pull the trigger on a deal if they don't have a new extension with him done by Friday. There might still be more time on that. It does seem like historically, Besser's deals have always come at the 11th hour. So it's not, you know, it's got to be uncomfortable for him, but it's not unusual for him to be in this situation. I did a story with him back in the fall and asked him, you know, sort of what his feelings were about approaching free agency. And at that time he was like, yeah, I've been down this road before. I'm more mature now. I know how to not let it get to me. But the way he was talking after the morning skate today, I think he is letting it get to him a little bit. And so I hope for the best for him.
A couple of teams going at it early before Friday's trade deadline. Bjorkstrand, Gord traded to the Lightning in a 3-team deal. Seems as though Tampa is pretty active, and Yanni Gord, you know, that's a guy that if he stays healthy, that's an interesting piece, Carol, as far as when the rink gets smaller in the playoffs, you seem to see guys like Yanni Gord make a big impact if he's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, Gord has the familiarity of having been in the Lightning dressing room back in the day and won those cups before too. So they know exactly what they're getting with him. And he's a feisty player who can make stuff happen on the ice for sure. I've had a chance to talk with him a few times while he's been with the Kraken, and he's a great leader and a good sort of motivator in the room. So I think he's a really nice depth piece for the Lightning. They rely so heavily on their top players, but their top players are also so amazing that it makes sense that they want to play them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But whatever support they can bring in is helpful. And then Bjorkstrand was another guy I thought might get moved. And so it was interesting to see him go in the same deal, because he was super clutch for Seattle during that that one playoff run that they had a couple of years ago, and was scoring big goals at big moments. And so much like I was saying about Granlund for the Stars, I think Lightning fans are going to be pretty pleased with what the guy they call the maestro might bring to the table in the playoffs.
Yeah. You know, the other interesting thing that Jim Neal mentioned as far as finding potential trade partners, it's very tough this year because parity, maybe more than other years, has really set in, and teams now are weighing, with just days left, and there are numerous teams, we still have a chance. If we go on a run of 5 or 6 games, we're right back in the wild card, or we are going to be in the wild card. I know Vancouver certainly won, and it's so interesting that like a game like Detroit, Utah tonight, that's a big impact on these playoffs, because both are kind of still hanging around those wild card spots. I'm just fascinated with, I really feel as though we don't talk about it because we're used to it now, but I really feel as though the NHL wild card race has brought a lot to the table.
And yeah, I agree with you. This year has been really exciting. And the fact that in the East, we've seen all year that the race has been tight, and then just in the last week or so, the fact that the West has tightened up the way that it has been really interesting to me since coming back from Four Nations. As you say, Utah, if they could make the playoffs in their first year in their new market, like what a coup that would be for their new ownership to, you know, sort of introduce the team and the sport to a new region. That would be amazing for them. And I'm also just fascinated by how well St. Louis has played since they came back from the break too. It's like Jordan Binnington rediscovered his Stanley Cup 2019 Jordan Binnington while he was at Four Nations. And given the role that they went on in 2019, how they went from worst to the cup, like I wouldn't rule out the possibility that the Blues could pull something like that out of thin air again this year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Let's stay in the Central Division. Winnipeg dominated all year long. Stars, based on a Winnipeg recent losing streak, I think it's now 6 points out of first in the Central. But, you know, Winnipeg has certainly been consistent. When they lose a few games, then they'll run 5 or 6 off. They're going to be an interesting team with Kevin Cheveldayoff, who hasn't been afraid in the past to make some trades. I know they have some cap space as well. I think center is the big position, and I think that'll be one of the needs that Winnipeg will be looking for if they can find the right partner.
Yeah, the thing that's always tough for Winnipeg too is that they're famously on more people's no-trade lists than probably any other team in the league. And so if they try to go big game hunting for a player like a Brock Nelson or a Scott Laughton, the player may not agree to facilitate that. I'm not sure what their specific trade clauses are as I say that out loud, but it's something that the Jets have had to deal with over and over again. The guys that they get are happy and they stay, but bringing in, there's a lot of, you know, they have a smaller pool that they can draw from. And as you said, the pool is not as big this year as it sometimes is, because there are so many teams that are, you know, still trying to make a run for a playoff spot.
Do you kind of feel as though Barry Trotz and Nashville are just looking at this as a really bad year and still feel as though they have the makeup to come right back and make the playoffs next year? Because they haven't made many moves.
Well, they've been tweaking all through the year with, you know, a lot of the younger players, like sending out the Phil Tomasinos and the Parsonens and guys like that. So It's a tough read. I wonder if Barry just kind of got caught a little bit in terms of how fast time moves in the NHL, and you know, got a little bit mesmerized by the reputations of what the Stamkoses and the Marchessos have done before. And rather than sort of looking to what a player is going to be like in a year or 2 years or 3 years from now. And the fact that they've, most of the moves that they've made have been with their younger guys is confusing to me. So I'm not really, I don't have a read on them, but I would be surprised if any of those, you know, if they do move a guy like a Ryan O'Reilly or a Luke Shen, I assume they would only do it in a situation where those guys would be amenable to where they're being moved to, because neither of them, I do know that neither of them has trade protection, but it's been spoken that, you know, that they would be treated with the same respect as if they had a no trade clause, and that the team would work with them before, you know, making any changes.
Every year we see some teams that kind of surprise us, and one team that the Stars will see tomorrow night is one of those teams in the Calgary Flames, supposed to be in a quasi-rebuilding stage. But boy, they've been in the thick of the wild card all year long. To me, they're one of the top five, you know, storied teams in the NHL as far as what they've been able to pull off. They've had a nice year, and now Kadri's playing a lot better for Calgary. So, you know, they're right in the mix. So the Stars are going to have their hands full tomorrow night.
Yeah, the first game of the year that Vancouver played was against Calgary, and can't remember exactly how it all went down, but the Canucks had a big lead after two periods, and Calgary came back and won the game in overtime. There was a fight early in the first period with JT Miller, where he accidentally injured one of the Flames players, and that got them all fired up. And it was just, Calgary showed a lot more resolve in that game than I think anybody on the Vancouver side was expecting. And I talked to Kadri about maybe a month ago, and I asked him if that game, how much of a tone setter that was for them to sort of galvanize them and give them kind of a bit of an identity for the season. Because I feel like that really sort of gave them a little bit of a jolt and a bit of, you know, made them stand a little taller and push their shoulders back a little bit more and be like, yeah, we have something here if we play for each other. So I have great respect for what they've been able to do this year. And then the fact that Dustin Wolf has taken a big step forward in that too, you know, makes them a huge wild card in this race for now. And then I imagine, you know, if they manage to get in.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, let's end on this, Carol. It's the chase to Gretzky, 11 goals to go for Alex Ovechkin. And I mean, in the hockey world, we're kind of in it day to day, but I'm just not, the buzz isn't there like other sports. Do you think that's based on how long Ovechkin's been in the league, or Gretzky, no matter what? And I kind of looking at the comparison NBA wise of a LeBron versus Michael Jordan, and that's still talked about today, but I don't know. I just feel as though the Ovechkin is kind of missing the buzz. What are your thoughts?
I think it's pretty buzzy.
Okay.
I feel like there's interest, and the highlights go out when he scores, and the attention is there. This countdown of the last 10 is going to be pretty dramatic, I think. And they, I know they just announced an initiative where with a charity component as well, that will kind of spike up this last segment. The thing that's interesting to me that I don't think has been talked about enough is that Ovechkin's in the ballpark where he could break that record in fewer games than Gretzky put up his 894 in.
That is interesting.
So that's kind of the number that I'm watching, because I feel like if he pulls that off, that would really, you know, take it to another level.
Here's my thought. All right, so if I say, all right, Carol, you're GM, and you have the choice, Ovechkin or Crosby, who are you taking?
I would take Crosby.
Okay.
I'm Canadian.
No, I get it. Ovechkin, McKinnon?
I would probably take McKinnon, too.
Okay. Let's go with, oh, man, I'm trying to think of someone. Ovechkin, Austin Matthews.
That I would be more tempted to look at. This is hard too, because are we talking about today Ovechkin, 39-year-old Ovechkin, or are we talking like peak 65 goal Ovechkin?
I think,
you know, if you want to give me like 07-08 Ovechkin, then this might be a different conversation.
I'm not saying he's not one of the greatest of all times. I'm putting him in that category. I just think that maybe he's thought of more of as a power play. I mean, that one-timer is historic. It's amazing. That statue has to be about the flex of the stick. It's one of the all-time great shots. I've always been fascinated when people ask me about where to put Alex Ovechkin. And to me, there are several players that, obviously from the past, but some current players that I would put ahead of him as well.
I understand what you're saying. I think time has kind of altered his legacy a little bit too, that we forget now how physical of a player he was in his younger days, in his 20s, when he was putting up like 200 plus hits a year. He wasn't always just standing there on that dot with the one timer. Like there were more dimensions to his game. And I do think that the leadership that he's been able to provide and the role that he played when Washington won the cup was, you know, like that's undeniable. He's got the championship. So maybe just because he doesn't talk a ton and he sort of makes it look easy. It's almost like if he made it look harder, maybe people would appreciate it more.
Yeah. No, I completely understand. All right. I said I was going to end, but one more on you. I think it's fascinating with Four Nations and how big it was for both the USA and Canada. Great for the game of hockey. What I tried to explain was what was so cool about Canada winning and people didn't understand was how hard they took, you know, getting knocked out of the World Juniors. Is that a correct assessment in that was a big deal and the Four Nations kind of, you know, lets that memory go?
The World Juniors are still going to be scrutinized left, right, and center for 2 years without a gold medal. This is unacceptable. Hockey Canada has had a little bit of a tough go of it in the last few years with everything that has surrounded the organization and them sort of trying to reset. But you're right. Like, it's a national catastrophe when they don't at least make the gold medal game in World Juniors. And that's a cross for those players to bear that I feel terrible that they have to deal with going forward. So heading into the Olympics and with the sort of perspective that this is the best U.S. team that we had ever seen and that they were deeper than Team Canada, especially in net. It was like just a big sigh of relief to know that the Canadian team could still dig deep and measure up and get the job done when it mattered.
Where can people find you on Twitter/X?
On Twitter/X, my handle is Pool88. It's POOL88. And if you want to find me on Blue Sky, it's just my name, Carol Schramm.
Okay. And any articles coming up that, like I said in the beginning, you're a terrific writer. I love the article. You not only talked about teams this year, but I love that you looked back on trades last year that didn't work out. I thought that was a fascinating perspective.
Yeah, it's eye-opening to look back after 12 months and see how everything shakes out and what those conditional draft picks all turn into and how those guys are doing. I just, in the last 2 days, I've put up teams to watch, buyers to watch, and sellers to watch. My sellers piece lasted about an hour before Jenny Gordon Bjorkstrand got traded, and I had them on the list, so I feel good about that. So please read ASAP before more stuff changes.
We'd love to have you on again. Thank you so much for joining us, Carol Schramm, feature writer for the Hockey News. Just try to get some sleep the next couple of days. I know it's going to be a busy one for you.
It will be. Thanks so much, Gavin. This has been really fun. Love to talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. That's Carol Schramm of the Hockey News. Thank you so much for listening to another edition of Spits and Suds right here on 105.3 The Fan. Until next time, have a great day, everyone.